Hello, everyone. This is episode 43 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. I'm your host, Gary Ng, from iPhoneinCanada.ca, and I'm joined here with Justin Louie. Justin, stranger, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's very good to be back. I want to apologize to everyone for our unscheduled hiatus. I appreciate all the people who contacted us wondering where the show is. I'm glad to hear people are out there enjoying it and missed us, and now we're back, and I plan on being here every week, and if we can't, I'm going to try to have some stuff maybe pre-recorded if we ever have to be away. So hopefully we'll be every week now, and I appreciate everybody's patience.
Yeah, we had some issues that we had to deal with, but we are back. It feels like this is episode one, but it's episode 43. So we're just going to cover some stories that we thought were pretty interesting that can really generate some discussion. So right off the top of the list here, iPhone 5 rumors. I mean, we can talk about this for days on end. We've heard, you know, so many different stories. You know, is Apple coming out with just an upgraded iPhone 4, kind of like an iPhone 4GS or iPhone 4S as people are calling it? Or is there going to be a brand new iPhone 5?
Well, that's the thing. We've been away 2 months, but you can kind of, this story alone almost summarizes the entire last 2 months. A couple weeks ago when we had planned to record again, I one evening went on iPhone in Canada and was trying to count down the stories, the number of stories that had gone on since we last recorded. And at that time, it was about 200 stories have been posted to the blog since we had recorded, and I think at least 50% of them were iPhone 5 rumors. And you know they're all false, and you know that Apple has kept their secrets well this time when almost every rumor contradicts. As you mentioned, it's going to be an iPhone 4S with a very similar design, just with an A5 processor. The next rumor says, no, it's a radical new design with a 4-inch screen. It's going to be out in September. No, it's actually October. Well, September is almost done now, so we can cross that one off. So I think it's all speculation. The only rumor that I put any credence in, as we've been hearing for a year, that it was going to be an 8-megapixel camera, and supposedly there was an image uploaded to Flickr that had the data in it and showed that it was an 8-pixel camera. So I think we're going to be looking at a new phone with an 8-pixel camera. The rest of it, your guess is as good as mine.
The good old sushi pick. Yep. I mean, I think Apple definitely, I think they are going to come out with two models. I think it makes sense. I mean, I think, you know, they're not going to just, you know, sit back and kind of let Android sort of, you know, take people over with all the hardware specs. I mean, for them, it seems to be just a hardware specs race, but, you know, I'm pretty sure they're going to come out with, I'm hoping anyways that, you know, they're going to come up with something that's brand new. I know that there was some discussion about how, you know, the aluminum antenna, you know, there were either issues or there weren't, but I think there definitely will be a new phone just to sort of, you know, keep the competition, you know, to try to keep up with Apple. That's what I think anyways. And I mean, the iPhone 4 is still an amazing phone. I mean, I could still use this phone for the next year or two. I mean, the screen is just my favorite part. It's very lightweight. It works. I think the next phone needs to be, you know, really great to get people who are using an iPhone 4 to upgrade. I mean, I'm talking like the casual iPhone 4 users. I mean, all hardcore iPhone users will upgrade regardless. If they came out with like a purple colored phone with fat buttons, people would get it anyways.
Yeah, you actually brought up three or four interesting points there. I hope I can remember them all. Part one, it'll be interesting to see how they market. If they have two models, there's all this rumor that they're going to have this cheaper model. Well, let's be realistic. They do that every year because they release, say, the 3GS for $50. It's never the exact same phone. They usually go down to one color. They reduce it down to 8 gigs. There's no longer 16 gig. So they almost always take the old phone, modify it slightly, and that's the cheaper iPhone. I'm guessing that's going to be what happens this time. The difference will be, will they make changes to the iPhone 4? Will it just be an 8 gig only or a 16 gig only? Will they go to some type of metal back instead of the glass back? And will they market it as just you can now get the iPhone 4 for $50 or $100 on contract? Or will it really be the iPhone 4S or something where they market as a separate phone? To me, that's the interesting part. We know no matter what, there's going to be two phones because they've done that in the past. As far as what you were saying about needing a new phone, I agree with you completely. I mentioned that to you before the show. I have never been less excited for a new iPhone. Not only have we had this one longer than we've ever had a phone, there's just nothing that the iPhone 4 doesn't do. Some of these rumors about the size and shape of the new phone makes me nervous. I really like the form factor as it is now. And the part you didn't mention, but I think is worth bringing up, is there was a study out a couple weeks ago that showed that the number one selling phone in the world is the iPhone 4 still, not from 6 months ago, even the most recent quarter, they're still selling well. The second best selling phone is the 3GS. So I don't think the everyday consumer even cares about a new phone. The hardcore geeks, we're going to be probably excited about the new phone and want to get it right away. Everybody else just wants an iPhone. And I know people personally who went out and got iPhone 4s a couple weeks ago, even though I said, oh, you might want to wait. It could be one as near as a few weeks. Oh no, I like it. I want it. That they don't care. The other thing is I think that we might be getting near the end of a new iPhone every year. If this new phone is an iPhone 5, I wouldn't be surprised if that was the last iPhone 5. I think next year or the year after, we might just get iPhone where they sometime in July, August, September, just say, here's the new iPhone and here's what it has, just like they do with MacBooks and iMacs. They don't say, here's the new iMac 3GS or the iMac XT, whatever. It's, this is the new iMac. And I think that's what Apple likes to do. And as you said about Google, Google's doing the exact opposite. Android, there's 9 million handsets, all these different specs, and Apple never does things that way. So it'll be interesting, but I think Apple's going away from that. I think they're quite happy that this iPhone 4 is still selling that well.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Apple's going to keep it simple. Like you said, every year the previous model goes on sale. I mean, you can still get an iPhone 3GS in Canada anyways for free on a 3-year contract or $49 or $99. I mean, I think people, you know, wanting an iPhone 4. I mean, once the iPhone 5 or whatever comes out, this is going to be probably one of the better tech deals on a smartphone. And that's getting the iPhone 4 on discount because it's still an amazing phone.
Absolutely. I tell people all the time, I would use an iPhone 3G right now before I would use any Android phone. Android's playing that dangerous game like Windows used to, where it's, oh, we have the dual core processor, but if the operating system still can't compare to Apple, they're not going to be that compelling. And I still believe, like, I'm not trying to dismiss Android as a platform, but I truly believe that their success has been greatly exaggerated. The reason they're 50% of the market is because of how cheap they are. Half the people, at least half the people who buy Android phones aren't going into a store saying, hey, I want the latest and greatest Android. They're saying, my contract is up. What's the next phone I can get for free? I see ads even here in Canada, which things tend to be expensive. There's Android 2.2 phones available for $69 and $79 pay as you go. There's no contract. I can't remember. It's like the Android Geo or something that you see a lot of people on message boards snapping up for $70 or $80, just unlocked, no contract. So you're never going to see an iPhone ever that cheap. Apple and Android are just playing two completely different games, and there's room for both styles in the market.
Yeah, I think the when it comes down to Android phones, it's all about hardware in my books, because, I mean, I just hear people say, oh, you know, have you taken a look at the new Samsung Galaxy S2? I mean, that thing's a beast of a phone. But, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, what do I need all of this power for? I mean, I want a phone that will help me do things easier or, you know, solve a problem. I don't, you know, I think you look at computer hardware nowadays too, and it's gotten to a point where it's like, how much processing power do we need to run our web browser? How much RAM do you really need to go check your email or to go on whatever, on Twitter, right? So it comes down to, you know, different features and in innovation in my books. And I think, I mean, I'm just happier with the apps that people make in the App Store. So anyways, I mean, we could go on for hours. Let's move on to one of the stories that ended the business day today. Apple is now the world's most valuable company. Apple and Exxon Mobil, they've been playing sort of a back and forth game with their market cap. And Apple's been on a bit of a rise, and today they pulled that ahead. And once again, they're the most valuable company in the world in terms of market cap. The stock closed at, I think after hours, it was at $411 for one share. Apple is now worth, at the time of writing, it was about $337 billion, a $6 billion lead over Exxon Mobil. So this is pretty incredible for a company that was looking pretty bad in the 90s here.
Yeah, I don't think we have too much to say on this story. We've discussed it previously. I think it's just, again, remarkable that even five years ago, we always go back 10 years ago. I think we've heard that story enough now about how desperate Apple was. But even 2, 3, 4 years ago, when things were really cooking, I don't think most people still predicted that Apple would be the number one tech company, let alone company overall. And this number changes every day. But the interesting part is that Apple is firing on all cylinders and on a daily or weekly basis are fighting to be the most valuable company on earth, which is amazing when a few years ago, even you would have never dreamt that possible. I don't even think most people would have thought they'd be ahead of Google or Microsoft, considering how much more structured their business is and how much Microsoft still, with the amount of people on Windows and all those cash cows they've had over the years, it's amazing that Apple has got to this position, basically just making 3 or 4 really great products.
Yeah, I think the iPhone really, you know, took the world by surprise. I mean, the iPhone was my first Apple purchase, as opposed to one of the older iPods. But in terms of an actual Apple investment, that was my first big purchase. And ever since then, and just, you know, switching over to a Mac from a PC. Yeah, I mean, in terms of keeping up with technology and stuff, I mean, I still know what's going on. But, you know, before I used to have fun looking through Future Shop flyers to see what sort of new products would be out. Now I just don't even care because I know all of it's just, you know, the same old stuff. There's nothing really new that's available. And it seems that Apple is the only company that's sort of innovating and creating products that that work well. And I'm not just saying this as, you know, a person who enjoys Apple products. I'm just saying this from, you know, how I've changed as a consumer of technology.
Yeah, I agree with you. I've changed too. It goes right back to our previous story. The Android or the PC or the custom gaming computers, it's always based on specs. And I understand that there's still people out there who care about that stuff. It's kind of like people who work on their cars and I did something to get some more horsepower. And most likely when you're out driving on the street, you never notice that. But some people actually, that geekiness is what sort of comes out of it. Apple products, I hate saying it because it's so cheesy now, but they just work. And you notice anytime that Apple comes out with a new product, it's never been Steve Jobs standing up there going, oh, by the way, we have this processor and it now does this. It's here's these great new features and how they're going to fit into your life. And I was using Apple products before, so I didn't have that same road to you, but I know lots of other people who started with the iPod or started with the iPhone, and then when it came to buying their next computer, it was a Mac, and now they have the iPad. That's what Apple's been able to do. These things all just work. You don't have to worry about figuring out how to work them and installing things and worrying about drivers. Everything just works. They all work well together, and that's how you become the most valuable company on the planet.
Agreed. Next up here, one of the biggest upgrades, OS X Lion. I heard you told me you got a new computer, right?
Yeah, we actually were planning on recording right when that happened and then everything went down. I actually ended up getting a new computer the day Lion came out, so I was able to experience Lion sort of the way it's intended with a new trackpad and a great computer, but I also installed it on my like 5-year-old MacBook and it runs well. So I've been able to kind of test Lion on both extremes of the spectrum there.
Yeah, the reverse scrolling really messed up my brain on the first day or two, but now it seems pretty natural. Anytime I go back to a different computer that has the original scrolling, that still messes me up. So, I mean, you can turn it off, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, I mean, this is an iPhone podcast. We don't cover that much in Mac. My only advice for anybody out there who's a Mac user is upgrade to Lion and use it the way they intended. Don't reverse your scrolling. Use all the gestures. If you have a trackpad, use it. If you don't have a trackpad, consider getting one or at least have the Magic Mouse and just give yourself a good couple days or more ideally a couple weeks. Because the thing that I was really surprised with is I'm someone who's used a computer 8 hours a day, every day of my life for the last 20 years. Everything I do on a computer is muscle memory. And I can tell you, I was using Lion like I've been using it my whole life within hours. And as you said, I'm going over to my MacBook after only a couple hours of using it on my new iMac and the scrolling, the old way screwing me up. Apple has really, to me, nailed it. I think the negativity towards Lion, and I shouldn't say it's not a lot of negativity. The reviews have been fairly positive, but most of the negativity that's out there is based on people saying, oh, I can't stand reverse scrolling, or I can't stand all these gestures to do Launchpad or these various things. Give it a chance because Apple has really thought this stuff out. It may sound ridiculous or like hyperbole, but it's literally changed the way I use a computer. I use every app full screen. I use the reverse scrolling. I feel like I'm in Minority Report. I bought a trackpad. I bought a Magic Mouse and a trackpad. I wanted both because I figured, hey, if I don't like this trackpad, I better have a backup. Barely ever touch the mouse now. And to be able to take your four fingers and swipe between screens. And if you have a nice new computer, like this new iMac I got, I have 12 gigs of RAM, and it's truly unbelievable how fast everything moves. You're working on a screen, and you just have, say, Safari open. It's full screen. You don't have to worry about the desktop or anything else. Then you want to go over to your email, four finger swipe, and it's there. I just cannot believe how fluid it is. I think in 4 or 5 years, every computer will operate like this, and we'll look back and say Lion was the big game changer. And I actually think some people are doing themselves a disservice if they're afraid of change and don't try it.
Yeah, I mean, so far I've really enjoyed Lion. I don't consider myself a longtime Mac user. My first Mac was the aluminum MacBook, so I now have a 13-inch aluminum MacBook Pro. So I mean, I've used the operating system extensively, and it's just worked great. I haven't had any issues. But moving on to some other issues here. Let's talk about the role of the CEO of Apple. It recently has completely changed somewhat with Steve Jobs announcing his surprise resignation. Pretty sure everyone has read the email that he sent out to the board of directors and the Apple community, basically saying that if there ever was a day that he could no longer meet his duties and expectations as CEO, he would, let people know. He told them that day has come. So he obviously resigned as CEO, and he's still, chairman of the board, and he's just not the active CEO. And for his successor, once again, we have Tim Cook, the former chief operating officer. Basically, Steve is saying, you know what, my role in the limelight is pretty much done. I'm handing it over to Tim Cook. But obviously, as long as Steve is still here, he is going to have his say with what goes on at Apple.
Yeah, this is an amazing story. We could probably do a couple episodes just on this. You could discuss your initial reaction to it. You could discuss where you think Apple's going to, how they're handling it right this minute, where they're going to be in 5 years. My initial reaction, I think John Gruber said it best when on Daring Fireball. He said, when he heard the news, it was a hit to his nervous system. And that's sort of how I felt, because on one hand, it's completely unsurprising news. It was, everything was being built to that eventual conclusion, but you still never, you kind of just didn't want that to sort of happen. I woke up that day, I read an article, I think in my RSS feed, saying Steve Jobs to resign. And I was like, no way, it's just some bogus story, more Apple BS that somebody's going to have to apologize for. And then there was actually a text message from you saying, can you put it together and can we record tonight to discuss this? And I was like, oh crap, if Gary's asking me in my opinion, he wouldn't just base it on one dumb article. This must be legit. And then a few minutes later, I saw the news and saw the actual letter. So from a personal standpoint, it's sort of sad to see. You know, Steve Jobs would prefer to be the CEO. You know how great he is at the keynotes. As I've mentioned before, Apple keynotes are a big day for me. It's almost like a big sporting event or the Super Bowl. I kind of prepare the night before and then get the video going. Tim Cook and Scott Forstall and all those guys, Johnny Ive, they're all great, but none of them are Steve Jobs. So just from that standpoint, I will miss kind of seeing him on those events and kind of hearing from him every couple of weeks with his infamous Steve emails.
Yeah, is this going to be one of those events where you're like, where were you when Steve Jobs resigned?
It sort of is like that, especially for the geeky people out there.
Well, I mean, for me, I just, you know, I saw a story hit one of my feeds, and I wasn't really sure what was happening. I thought it was a joke. And then eventually I saw the actual email, and I was just, you know, a little bit surprised that it did come suddenly out of nowhere. I mean, we knew that the day was going to come, but it just, you know, there was no sort of warning in advance. And it just happened. And I can't remember the article that I was reading, but basically they were saying how the reason that Steve resigned now was because he was able to appoint his successor, which in this case, Tim Cook, who has already been doing his job since Steve, you know, took his medical leave. And they were saying that if Steve didn't resign and, you know, something happened and he wasn't here anymore, there would be no guarantee that Tim Cook would be the next CEO. The directors, you know, they would actually choose the next CEO. And, you know, even if Steve, you know, said he wanted to appoint Tim, there'd be no way to guarantee that. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
You do bring up a good point, and I want to be kind of careful how we discuss this. I don't feel comfortable, nor do I think it's appropriate to really speculate on Steve Jobs' health. I don't care if he's the CEO of Apple or the president of the United States or whoever he is. I think there's a certain amount of dignity and privacy people are owed. The only thing I'll say about that is I think it's stupid that people can only speculate the worst case scenario when it comes to his health or other personal issues. Apple and Steve Jobs don't leave things to chance. They don't do things without thinking about them. So of course you can be pessimistic and you can, I understand people saying, hey, Steve Jobs loves this company. He loves being Apple CEOs. Things cannot be that great for him if he would make this decision. But on the other hand, you could just as logically argue that they're coming off the greatest success they've ever had. The iPhone 4 is selling great. They've had a successful launch of Lion. The iPad is literally changing multiple industries. It's crushing all their competitors. It's embarrassing what's going on with the other tablets. So you announce it now, maybe take the little bit of a hit, and then you come back with the iPhone 5 and you have that momentum back. Not to mention as well, the Apple stock price, as huge as it is, there's been all kinds of experts saying the stock price is actually being held down a little bit because of the uncertainty of Steve Jobs. So when you have this company firing on all cylinders, the only chink in their armor whatsoever was the fact that Steve Jobs was on a medical leave. You get rid of that, you say, hey, I'm still on the board, this guy's our new guy. It could just be a really shrewd, really well-organized business move. So call me an optimist, but I'd like to believe that that is the reason. And he's still an Apple employee, still head of the board. So let's hope that he's there for a long time. And We know Steve Jobs is going, he had a major influence on Apple when he was completely gone from the company. So what does he need to do? Steve Jobs no longer has to do the day-to-day rules. If you look at it, he was never a traditional CEO in some of those daily duties anyways. So this, it doesn't necessarily mean Steve's fingerprints aren't going to be all over everything that goes on for the next little while.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's never a good thing to speculate about anyone's health whenever they're in, some sort of health situation. So moving on here, this was a pretty hilarious story when I first heard about it. The San Francisco Police Department, they launched an internal investigation into a, quote, lost iPhone 5 that occurred in San Francisco. Apparently, another phone or prototype was left in a Mexican restaurant / bar, and the phone was tracked electronically to a fellow's house, and Apple investigators were accompanied by plainclothes San Francisco police officers, and basically the Apple investigators were able to search the house and the car. But what makes this story so interesting was that originally there was chatter of, you know, this happening, and when asked about it, the SFPD, they denied that anything was going on. But then eventually word got out that one of the investigators was a former San Jose lieutenant, and he was indeed an Apple employee. Basically, the San Francisco Police Department did come out and say, we did assist Apple. They talked to the fellow whose house was searched. He said, you know, they were threatening him about other things. It's another situation about a lost prototype. I mean, are we going to believe this, or is this some sort of perfect PR move to get people excited about the next iPhone again?
Wow. I mean, this is another, it seems like a really kind of cut and dry story, but it's another story that you could hit on a bunch of different angles. When I first heard it, I didn't believe it whatsoever. It just sounded so implausible. The original reporting seemed so shoddy. But then I guess in the meantime, we've seen the police confirm some of this. So at least parts of this story are true. Of course, we can deal with all the jokes about Apple needing to hire people, testers that don't spend so much time in bars. It's kind of weird that if this phone was out there, that nothing, it's not got in anybody's hands who's trying to sell it or blog about it. And if it wasn't obvious as we do these stories, they're sort of in chronological order from what we missed. And it's kind of interesting that this is the first big thing that Tim Cook had to deal with. He got his very own iPhone, lost iPhone story, right, to deal with. So really, I think the stories got overblown. If this was any other company, we probably wouldn't even hear about it. You have some people wanting to make it sound like Apple's just this big, bad, evil corporation that's running the police departments and things like that. I think that's greatly exaggerated. And I don't want to, you're kind of innocent until proven guilty, but it's kind of, you kind of got to wonder about this guy who supposedly had the phone. He's claiming he has no knowledge of it, but they track it to his house and he admits to being at that place. It's a pretty huge coincidence that Apple's Find My iPhone service pinpoints his home. They knock on his door. Oh yeah, I was there. I was there that night, but I don't have the phone and never did. So it's a fishy story altogether. My guess is he probably did have the phone and threw it out the window as they got there.
Yeah, I mean, you'd think, we've heard some stories about how seriously Apple takes its security when it comes to prototypes. I think one developer shared a story about how he was a developer developing an application for the iPad. And when it came time to test his app on the iPad, he was in a room where the iPad was secured to a table. It was literally like drilled down and physically stuck to the table and inside a case. So you couldn't even see the outside of the table. The developer also went so far to say that, you know, even pictures of the setup were taken to verify You know, if any leaked pictures were to get on the web, they would know where it would come from. So I find it very hard to believe that Apple would, you know, let another engineer lose a phone like this. I mean, it's ridiculous, but, you know, quite possibly maybe it wasn't an iPhone, or maybe it was some other sort of test device of some sort. But I mean,
well, there was also rumors earlier that Apple had actually built an iPhone 5 in an iPhone 4 casing. There was iPhone 4s floating around to certain developers that had the upgraded RAM and the A5 chip. So maybe it was one of those. Maybe somebody bought this phone on Craigslist for $200 and they're walking around with it and they don't even notice it's an iPhone 5 because it looks so much like the iPhone 4. But I agree with you. It is hard to believe it would happen twice, especially with how secure Apple is. And I know for one thing, I'm not going to try to jinx myself here, but I couldn't picture ever losing my phone. I'm so careful with it. If I'm sitting in a restaurant or sitting somewhere, I barely ever set it down. I'm so conscious not to do that. If I need it, I just put it back in my pocket and take it out as I need it. But anytime I do get up, I mean, even in my own home, I carry it from one room to another. You think somebody who works for Apple and knows they have this priceless device, you would think they wouldn't be walking out with it. But who knows? It sounds like there's at least a little something to this story. We don't know what was lost, but it appears at least something was in it. I don't think it was drummed up by Apple, because if you were wanting to get hype for the next phone, you'd want at least some of the details to leak out like they did last time with Gizmodo. So my guess is sometimes people, news is what it is. It's not always some conspiracy that Apple's missing some type of device. The police went to do it, and we'll probably never know exactly what happened.
Yeah, I think what they need to solve this is to come up with those, you know, chains to the iPhone case type thingies. Like, you know, people have like chains on their wallets so they'll never be lost. I think just a simple fix like that would solve any lost prototypes in the future.
Or I heard somebody else, and this was a good suggestion, not my own. I guess there's these Bluetooth keychains you can buy that you put on your keys and it works with your phone. Some type of device that if you walk too far away from something, you get an alert. So maybe everybody at Apple needs to have some type of wristwatch that has a Bluetooth connection to their test device. And if they ever walk more than 10 feet away from it, a little alarm goes off or something.
Yeah, I heard about that too. That's a pretty interesting accessory. I can't remember where it was from. I think I'll get back to you on that.
If we find it, we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah. Next story here. Samsung and Apple, they've had various lawsuits back and forth. This latest report says that Samsung is already planning legal action against the unreleased iPhone 5. The company has said that, you know, just after the phone is released, one of the senior executives told the Korea Times that Samsung plans to take Apple to court for its violation of Samsung's wireless technology related patents. Basically, he said, "We will stick to a strong stance against Apple during the lingering legal fights." I mean, this stuff goes on and on. I can't even keep up with it anymore, and I've almost just given up.
Exactly, and that's the reason I put this story in the rundown, was for this reason only. If it wasn't clear what this story is about, it's about Samsung preparing to sue Apple for their next phone. And the guy's admitting that we have no clue what the next phone is, but if it's able to connect to the internet or connect phone, if it's a communication device whatsoever, it must violate our patents. So basically, Samsung is claiming they basically own the right to communicate, which just to me, I put this in because it's the perfect illustration of how messed up the system is. We're not going to really cover the patent stories here. I skip them every week, but if you want to find them, you can go to Ars Technica and Engadget, and This Is My Next. Some of those guys are even lawyers, and they dig into this. But to me, it's just an illustration that the system's completely broken. You have Apple spending billions of dollars to buy a whole bunch of Nortel patents. Then you have Google buying IBM and Motorola. Google has, to me, threatened their own business model by getting in bed by buying Motorola just for the patents. And as you said, I don't even want to get into it because it's so complicated and it's so messed up. The only thing I will say, and this probably sounds like an Apple fanboy, but it's how I feel, so I'll say it, is at least Apple is suing people for stuff they invented. As Steve Jobs said a few years ago, we invent this stuff, we plan to protect it. And to me, no matter what you think of any of these companies, there's just a little bit of integrity in it when you say, hey, we came up with this thing, we're protecting it, as opposed to Google, who's walking around talking out of both sides of their mouth, basically stealing everything, grabbing everything, and then we're going to try to buy the patents. And I was really turned off a couple weeks ago when Google bought some patents and gave them to Samsung and HP to fight against Apple. To me, that's just...
Yeah, they gave them to HTC.
Yeah, HTC, you're
hilarious,
right there.
Hilarious enough.
To me, that's just the joke. It's as bad as... Google's become a patent troll just as bad as that LodSys, where it's like, we've just gone out and bought these patents. Some company that invented them unfortunately went out of business and we grabbed their patents. It shows the system is broken, and I'm not completely defending Apple. There's some lawsuits they're involved in that sort of on the outside turned me off a little bit, but at least they're protecting stuff that they not only invented, but they brought out and they marketed. And you can say whatever that swipe, there might have been prior art or these other things, but nobody was swiping and using multi-touch on a product the way Apple was.
Yeah, right on. Anyways, back to the product that we were talking about. It's from Kensington, the same company that makes those Kensington locks for your laptops. They have this new accessory called the Bungie Air. And basically, it's a wireless, you get a little compact key fob, and there's a wireless tether between the fob and your iPhone. So if that connection breaks, the fob will alert you that you've left your phone behind. So neat product.
Yeah, Apple should probably just buy that company and have the top engineers from that company come work on their prototypes.
Moving on. This one is kind of a big story for nostalgic Nintendo fans. Once again, the Nintendo president, he reaffirms that the company won't be developing for iOS as long as he's in control. Basically, he dismissed the report that some investors had been pressuring him to stop concentrating on 3DS games and to consider developing Facebook and iOS games, because right now Nintendo is just one big giant bag of hurt. They did have some success a few years back with their NDS handheld units. I still have one somewhere in a drawer. They also had success with their Wii because it was an innovative gaming console, which ours is actually collecting dust. But yeah, I mean, right now, I mean, like I said in my little post about it, there are tons of third-party emulators that are available that people can get to play these old Nintendo games. I mean, why not try to make some money off of that?
This is a big story for me, and I'm going to try to cut it somewhat short. I'm a pretty big Apple fan, as everyone knows. But if I have a second favorite company, it's probably Nintendo. I grew up with these games, and you said at first, nostalgia. There's a lot of nostalgia, but to me, they're still making some of the absolute best games. And what drove me crazy about all the reporting on this story is everybody basically suggesting that there's only two models here. Either Nintendo brings everything to the iOS, or they stick to their guns, and that means instant failure. First of all, I think they should bring stuff to iOS, but don't write Nintendo off, because 5 or 6 years ago, when the Wii was announced at E3, everybody thought, here's their last console. They're going the way of Sega. They've jumped the shark. They've lost it. Everything's about the PS3 and the Xbox. This system's dead in its tracks. And it came out and it was a phenomenon because it did basically what Apple's known for doing. It completely innovated. It changed the way people played games. And all of a sudden, your grandmother and your sister and people who never played games. I remember when I first got mine, I brought it to a family Christmas, and people who'd never played a game in their life could swing the remote and play a simple game of tennis. And a lot of hardcore gamers didn't like it because of the graphics and the lack of HD. But to me, Twilight Princess, the Zelda for Wii, was still the best game that's been out in the last 3 or 4 years. So I think they still have potential. Where I think Nintendo's being stubborn is, who said you had to do one or the other? Bring out your old games on iOS at first. you're going to bring in millions and millions of dollars. They're going to be huge hits. If EA and Sega and Capcom and everybody else can keep releasing Frogger 92 times, Nintendo's going to kill in that. And you can still make your exclusive, your big, big new games, the innovative games, keep bringing those out for 3DS. Work on your next home console. I just don't see why everyone's painting it as it's an either or situation. I don't think if the original, like Link to the Past, Super Nintendo Zelda is suddenly available for my iPad, how that hurts their new Zelda Skyward Sword next week. They're two completely different markets and they shouldn't give up on either. I think they're being really stubborn, not considering even bringing, because they even make their old games available on the 3DS. They have this retro channel now. Just make the iOS devices one more area to get those retro games.
Oh, totally. I mean, people can still buy old retro games on the Wii, right? So, I mean, it is possible, but I guess, it definitely does. I think Nintendo needs to realize that people aren't willing to pay $30 to $60 for one gaming title nowadays, unless it's, you know, another epic Call of Duty series or some sort of crazy game that's been in development for years. And those are for the hardcore gamers. But for casual gamers, I mean, is someone going to go pay, you know, $60 to go play, you know, new Super Mario Brothers for the Nintendo DS? I mean, if you're a parent and you're looking to buy some games for your child, would you buy a Nintendo DS for like, you know, $150? And then continue to buy games at like $30 to $40 a pop? Or would you buy an iPod Touch and you can download free games that are equally just as good? I mean, most of the time, gaming is just, you know, it's sort of a short-term thing anyways, just to keep your kid busy or to do something. I mean, it's economically speaking, it's just times have changed. And I think they really need to embrace it and give it a test run.
You're absolutely right, and that's where Nintendo's in trouble. It's the whole parent thing, because Nintendo's right when they say the games are better on the Nintendo system for the most part. Like, Angry Birds is a great game, but we had a family gathering a little while ago, and one of my little nephews was playing the new Zelda for the DS, and I was just blown away. It made me actually want to go out and buy a DS, because I was like, this looks like the Wind Waker. This is like gaming you just wouldn't see on the iOS platform. So I don't see why they can't bring out a system, charge $100-$150 max for it, have an area where you can download free and 99 cent games. And when you want to bring out your blockbuster Zelda titles, bring that out as a $20 or $30 cartridge. And I think people would still buy it, but still have those other alternatives. You're right. A parent looking at, I can buy my kid a Nintendo and an iPod Touch for roughly the same price. And the iOS, they can not only get free games, they can get a whole bunch of games for 99 cents. They can get games to help them with flashcards for school and everything else. It is a no-brainer. And my aunt had a party a couple weeks ago, a barbecue, and there was 10 or 15 kids, kind of 12 or under, and every single one was running around with like an iPod or an iPhone. I couldn't believe it. And these were people who you traditionally aren't the really techie people. So it's Nintendo's losing to that market, and if they don't smarten up, they could be in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, it'd be interesting to see if Nintendo would be willing to step outside of their box to venture out. Next up here, Apple iTunes U. They now have 600 million downloads and counting. For those who are unfamiliar with iTunes U, it's basically a whole bunch of educational podcasts that universities have uploaded to iTunes. It's completely free, so you could basically be taking, you know, any class you want from a whole bunch of different prestigious universities from around the world, and it's absolutely free. I think it's a fantastic resource for people who have been using it.
The main reason I wanted to put it in was just because we probably have a whole bunch of listeners who've never heard of it. I was thrilled to hear the story because Apple just kind of quietly added it to iTunes a few years ago. The odd time Steve Jobs might mention it in passing, or if you look on one of his slides, it's down as like the 10th point about what's been happening with iTunes. So I was thrilled that it's had that much success, because I want it to stick around. If you haven't seen it, you really need to go on to it because it's world-class education. Perfect example of this is Stanford University. Everybody knows Stanford, one of the most respected universities on the planet. Well, they do an iOS course every single year to teach you how to program for iOS. It's usually has an Apple, a higher up Apple engineer, either teaching the course or part of the course. And this is a course that they limit the amount of people, like 30 or 40 people can take it a year, but they make the video, every single lecture is available in an excellent quality video. They make all the materials available. They make all the emulators, all the little project files available. So you can be sitting in wherever you are and basically be taking the top iOS class. And I've tested a bunch of these and it just blows me away how good a quality they are, how they make everything available, and it's all the best schools from around the world. So it kind of makes education available to everyone. So theoretically, you're not going to get a degree from Stanford, but you could take all their engineering courses, all their computer science courses, and be getting the same type of education that people are paying tens of thousands of dollars a year to have. So it's an amazing resource that I suggest people check out. And it's not just iOS development. It's every subject, history, English, every different language, politics, every kind of science. It's all there.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible that all of that is free. So, I mean, for people who have lots of time on their hands and they want to learn about a new subject, it's an amazing resource, like you said. Completely agree. Moving on here, this was a pretty neat story when I first heard about it. Stevie Wonder praises iOS for its accessibility features. Basically, he was at a concert and he was doing a little bit of a performance, and he took a time out to speak to the audience to give a hand to someone that, you know, whose health is not very well right now. And he's talking about Steve Jobs and basically said, for someone who in his company has, you know, took a challenge in making his technology accessible to everyone, he's basically saying there's nothing on the iPad or the iPhone that you can do that he can't because of these accessibility features. He was saying that, you know, this is what we've all done before. He's saying, I can be talking to you and you can be looking at me and I can be doing whatever I need to do and you won't even know what I'm doing. Yeah. I mean, that's so true. I mean, how many times have you been talking to a buddy and you've had to check something quickly and, you know, your friends don't even know what you're doing, but thanks to accessibility features, Stevie Wonder, you know, who is visually impaired, he can achieve what we can do on iOS devices. So I thought that was really nice.
Yeah, I've heard this type of story numerous times, but this is the first time that it's sort of been brought to the mainstream by a celebrity, because Apple is way ahead of almost everybody else when it comes to these accessibility functions. If you look in OS X, it's the same way. There's all kinds of assistive technology. And when Steve Jobs resigned, there was just for weeks, there was just a new tribute coming out every couple days. And they were, of course, all about his incredible things he's done at Apple and Pixar. But I thought it was neat. The last couple of weeks, we've had this tribute from Stevie Wonder about his major influence in this accessibility thing for the blind and the disabled. And then you had Bono a few weeks ago saying, hey, don't question this man's giving and his charitable stuff, because he's helped us raise millions and millions of dollars for the fight in Africa. Steve Jobs was one of the first people on board with that. So it's interesting to get these tributes coming into Steve Jobs from some of these lesser known areas that we don't normally hear about.
Right on. Yeah. Bono was quick to step up to the plate talking about the Red product campaign that was hugely successful. Moving on to some of our app news. I think we have a few minutes left to talk about some apps. The first one here is called Luminance. Why don't you tell us a bit more about this app?
Yeah, Luminance is a really nice photo editing app. Some people even refer to it as the Aperture for iOS. I'm not a big Aperture user, so I'm sure it doesn't have that type of functionality, but it's a really slick, fast photo. It kind of is Instagram, but with more options. It has, you can add more than one filter. You can tweak every element, every aspect of it. It's got pretty much perfect ratings in the App Store, and it did go free over the weekend. So hopefully it's still free if you want to grab it. But if not, it's 99 cents. If you're someone who likes to have filters, but you're more, you don't want to just upload and lose the pictures to Instagram, you kind of want to be able to tweak them and save really high quality versions, this app is really good. And the developer has said they have a big update coming out with even more improvements. So again, just my favorite, one of my favorite things about iOS, to have this almost desktop quality photo editing app sitting there for free, or 99 cents on the iPhone and iPad. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I just took a look at it. It's pretty slick. It's now 99 cents. It's no longer free. But moving on, another app here. It's Adobe's Create PDF. This app is for both iPhone and iPad. It's $9.99. It basically will let you create PDF files right on your iOS device, which is huge.
With this app, I haven't used it. I don't find the need to kind of create PDFs in that way. And if I do have to create PDFs, I use some more like indie developer kind of third-party stuff. But I just put it in there because it's interesting to see how, I wonder how close we are to Photoshop on the iPad, because Adobe has really embraced the iOS device. They have a bunch of controllers for their high-end products. Here's a product they've released to the iPhone. So that's the main reason I put it in, to show you how serious of a platform this is, that even Adobe is, despite some of their problems with Apple over the years, they're still being very aggressive when it comes to getting products on the App Store.
Yeah, totally. Next up here, we have Skype Wi-Fi. Skype has come out with their own dedicated Wi-Fi app that enables you to get access to thousands and thousands of wireless hotspots. Basically, I think they teamed up with, was it Boingo or Boingo? Boingo. The wireless hotspots. I can't remember the name, but basically, you now have access to over 1 million Wi-Fi hotspots around the world. But the catch is, you'll be able to use your Skype credit to pay for surfing of any sort of web page, to pay for Skype calls. Basically, I think this is a great move by Skype, because the last time my wife and I, we were in New York just this summer after Apple Expo, I had to use some Wi-Fi, and I ended up creating one of those accounts using Boingo. And it was just a pain in the butt to, you know, go through the registration and all this stuff. I mean, if I had this Skype Wi-Fi app, it would have just made my life a heck of a lot easier, just to be able to pay through my Skype credit account, because everything's set up with PayPal and all that stuff.
Yeah, I have no personal experience with it because I haven't traveled anywhere, and I have 6 gig plan here at home, so I haven't needed it. But it's great news. I wanted people to know about it. And as many of these things we can get as possible, anything that puts pressure on the telcos to lower their prices to give people options is a good thing. And we all know from traveling, if you roam with your data plan, you're dead. You're going to go broke. And trying to get free Wi-Fi is getting more and more difficult all the time. So this is a great move for Skype.
Next up, we have Boxy for iPad. Have you been using this app on your recent acquisition of your iPad 2?
Yes, this is, to me, the sleeper app of the week. If you don't know about it, you definitely want to get it. If you're not familiar with Boxy is it was originally started as an underground kind of project using open source technology to stream to the Xbox, I think was the main reason they did it at first. So if you install it on your Mac, you can, it does two really cool things. It gives you access to all the internet video that's out there. So instead of trying to surf around to Netflix or iTunes or Funny or Die, all these different video sites, it brings everything into one thing. It's sort of turns your computer into a TV. You can also buy a Boxy box now separately if you want it to your actual TV. It just makes finding and watching content really good. Now, the great thing about the iPad version is it does almost the same thing. You can use it in three ways. We're running late here, so I don't want to take too much time. But it will stream videos from your computer or an external hard drive to your iPad. There's a bunch of apps that do that, but most of the good ones cost money. This is free. I've been testing it, and it works very well. If you don't want to spend any money on it, this is the one I recommend. There's one that I like. stream to me. It's a few bucks. I think it works just a little bit better. So that's what I use. But if you want to stream, if you have a whole, like the iPad only has 16 or 32 gigs. If you have hundreds of gigs of movies on your hard drive, this will do that. It also allows you to put in your Facebook and your Twitter and go on to Netflix and these different things. So you can curate. And then it is also sort of an Instapaper for video. There's a bookmarklet that you can install on Safari on your Mac or on your iPad or anywhere. And if you get to a YouTube video and you're like, oh, I want to watch this video, but I don't have time right now. You hit this bookmarklet. The next time you open up Boxy for iPad, it'll be sitting there waiting for you. So I've been actually using it a ton. And in general, it's amazing now how much video I consume on my iPad. It's a really big movie and effects extravaganza. I go to the movie theater or I watch it on my better TV. But for everything else, TV shows, I just find that I usually go to bed about an hour earlier than I used to and just catch up on Netflix or Boxy or whatever it is. The iPad's really quite the device for video now.
Yeah, I completely agree. One of my favorite streaming apps is Air Video. That's one of the earlier apps, and it works flawlessly for streaming content over the air to my iPad, and it will play it with live conversion of any sort of DivX files. But yeah, I mean, I don't know if people have heard about the trick using a VPN with your Netflix account. You can actually, with your Canadian Netflix account, you can access the US Netflix library just by turning on a VPN. So that's a trick that has worked for myself, and I've been able to access Breaking Bad, which is now in iTunes in the States, and I've been able to catch up on all three seasons. I'm finally up to the fourth season. I know you mentioned Breaking Bad to me a while ago. I'm always a bit slow to jump onto these TV shows. I just don't have that much time to watch them, but it's an incredible show.
Well, yeah, speaking of Netflix, two issues here. Netflix in Canada has got so much better lately. So any listeners who maybe tried the free trial when it first came out and were underwhelmed, the selection has really got a lot better on the Canadian site. But the minute you go to the US site, you realize that we still have a long way to go. And do you know, is this an advertised feature? Like, are they being fair saying, hey, if you're Netflix in Canada, but you're visiting relatives in the US, or is it just sort of a glitch in the system right now?
Well, previously, I think they're trying to unify the way people log into Netflix, because previously, to get into the US site when I was in the States at one point, I had to create a completely separate account for iTunes USA. But then again, I never did try even logging in with my Canadian account on the US site did not work. But by turning on this VPN, it just automatically detects it and the library shows up. It's incredible. I mean, like you said, the releases still have been coming in for the Canadian library. It has been getting better. We need to remember that the Netflix USA library has been available for much longer than the Canadian version. So any Knight Rider fans out there, that's now available in Netflix Canada. All you fans of the Hoff, he's there ready and waiting.
One other thing, I was going to maybe use this as a pick later, but now that we're talking about it, we might as well. There's an app, and I have no idea how to pronounce it, but it's spelled ONAVO, and they advertise themselves as a way to shrink your data usage. It basically installs a profile on your account, and it's basically creating a VPN, but one that you don't have to fool around with. It's just installed on your phone, and I've been using it a little bit, and I can't really say how much it's saving me or not, because I don't pay that close of attention, and I never am close to my 6 gig plan. But it also works as a VPN, so you can actually, if you're in Canada, you can actually use it to stream Pandora. It works with Last.fm, it works with Crackle, it works with the ABC player, and it kind of doesn't work with Netflix. It's weird. If you have it running, you go to the Netflix site, it will actually bring you to the US Netflix, so you see all their listings. But then when you go to hit play, I found it
says this title is not available. It
says this title is not available. So then what you can do is I just quickly, here's another trick for people. If you're saying using Hotspot Shield, which is a free VPN, it's not the most reliable service and it's slow, but these things that check for your location, they usually won't check multiple times, and Netflix definitely doesn't. So you can turn Hotspot Shield on, hit play on the movie, turn Hotspot off, and replay the movie, and then you can watch it. So you don't have to have that lag or that bad, the slowness of Hotspot Shield. So it's definitely getting pretty easy to access Netflix and other video sites from Canada. So if this is all new to you, I would try this Onivo or whatever it's called. You might want to look into Hotspot Shield. They both work for this type of stuff.
Yeah, I first reviewed Onivo or whatever it's called. And if you're interested, just search for it on the blog. The reason it works is because they save your data, because everything is going through an Amazon S3 server. So that's where your US IP comes from. That's basically was answered on one of their FAQs on their website. But yeah, it works perfectly for Pandora, all of those, you know, streaming music apps. It's amazing. There's nothing to touch. Runs in the background. However, I know some people have had issues with checking email or accessing some sites because your IP is now an American IP. So that's just one thing to look out for. Back to your Hotspot Shield. Yeah, it's basically Hotspot Shield. Previously, they had an iPhone, official iPhone page where you could click the button and get the details for your VPN account. But now they've taken down that page, so unofficially they're not supporting it. But those accounts that people were able to get, they're still working. So you can just use some of the various IDs and accounts, and it still works. But it does turn off after like literally 3 or 4 minutes. So you have to be quick to the trigger here to press play on your video. And as long as it's already playing, you can pause it and play it again. That's the trick. And sometimes I find you need to force close Netflix in the multitasking bar on my iPad to make sure I get that US connection right off the bat.
The moral of this story is this is geeky stuff that's getting easier and easier all the time. And all these content creators better realize that they're wasting their time with all these stupid global restrictions. The world isn't separated into different countries anymore for this type of product. So trash all your old licensing deals and rethink this, because if I'm watching ABC, a TV show, you're not getting paid necessarily for those views, but I'm going to watch it anyways. So just have a proper Canadian advertiser and you're going to get your page views. They got to get their head in this game.
Yeah. We're running a little bit late, so let's touch on one more app. This is finally the one that we've been waiting for, the official Skype for iPad app. And it's great. I think it looks great and it works great. So it's about time that we have an official Skype for iPad app. Previously, I was using the iPhone version sort of maximized, and that wasn't really the best experience. But the new version works great on my iPad.
Yeah, I haven't really used it much, but the testing I did, it worked really well and looks great. And just one more thing that makes that iPad a laptop competitor for many people.
Any other updates or apps you want to talk about, Justin?
I'll just say quickly, a really cool app that, again, will just happen to work for that ONAVO, whatever that VPN service is called. There's a website that you probably have heard about but may haven't tried yet because they limited, but it was called Turntable FM. And what Turntable FM is, in a lot of ways, it's like Pandora, but instead of it being randomly generated by a computer, it's your friends or people live DJs. So you go into a room and you say, pick the indie rock room, and there can be hundreds of people in the room making requests. So it takes social music to a whole new level, and there's five people who are DJing, and it's just a total blast. I was using it from day one. I got in on the beta really early. Then they got into some trouble with the music industry and had to shut out certain countries and stop the invites. I think everybody can get in now. It's still restricted in Canada, but their iPhone app works. And I'm pretty sure the iPhone app works even if you're not on a VPN, because a couple times I tried it and it was working. I don't know if it just took them a while to get their system up. But if you haven't tried it, Turntable FM, I know it just sounds like, oh God, here's another social music thing, but this is actually you're interacting with people and it has these cool avatars. And when you like a song, you start bobbing your head like it. And it's just a lot of fun. If you've read some of the people blogging about it, people who aren't normally into this stuff have just been blown away. Mm-hmm. There's celebrities in there DJing. It's again, a perfect example of the record industry should love this thing, but they're doing everything they can to make it not work. They just don't get it. You have people having a blast with music. It's good for everyone, but they're slow to get it. So it's now out for the iPhone. The app is going to be awesome. Right now it's got some glitches. It can crash. It doesn't find some of the songs. They've already done two updates. They must have an in with Apple because it was updated during the day it was launched. They already had an update. So hopefully it gets even better. They've corrected some of the glitches, but it's still not perfect. But you can tell just from the basic functionality that it's going to be really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One last thing. One of my favorite streaming sites for music has been Grooveshark. It's almost like, you know, a Pandora, you know, for Canadians. Most of the time you can punch in any artist and you'll get the songs available to stream right on your computer. They did have an iPhone app, but it was pulled. It is available for jailbroken iPhone users. Just search for it in Cydia.
Yeah, one day we should do a whole episode just on music apps, but we've run long today, so we'll leave it at that. But lots of good things happening in the music world, including Spotify launched a few weeks ago, and it just shows how good competition can be, because within weeks of Spotify opening, both RDO and what's the other big competitor, Moog, have both announced that they're offering free service as well. So now you can get those, all three of those are free on your computer, ad-supported, where you can pay $5 to $10 a month to have unlimited ad-free and use them on your mobile device.
Awesome. Yeah, it's getting really, it's a great time to be a music lover. Anyways, once again, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to the iPhone podcast. Thank you for, still listening and all the tweets and emails that we've been getting about trying to get another episode back up and running. Justin and I, we've been trying really hard to get a convenient time, but there were some uncontrollable circumstances, so we weren't able to get things going, but we are back. So thanks again for listening. Please remember to rate us on iTunes. That is probably the most helpful thing you can do to help us out. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiphonepodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I'm located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada and Justin is located at twitter.com/JustinLouie. That's L-U-E-Y. So once again, thanks for listening and we should see you next week.